Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, everybody. I'm Kim Holderness.
And I'm Penn Holderness. And welcome to the Holderness Family Podcast.
We've had our first fight of the day. It wasn't a fight.
That wasn't a fight. No. It was whether or not we should sit next to each other or across from each other. Like, and just, you said it was weird sitting next to me instead of across from me.
Well, we're staring. We're waiting for our guest to log into the Zoom call. And you guys, it's going to be a lot of fun. But so it was just strange to like sit right next to you. Anyway.
Strange to sit next to me?
It came out wrong. No, and talk to you, but look straight ahead.
Yeah, so just look at me.
Okay.
The camera's not rolling yet. We don't roll the camera until our guest comes on.
This is great, guys. Welcome to our life and our podcast.
No, it's just not. There's no drama.
Okay.
Everything's fine.
Everything's fine. What? Hey, a little preview. We're trying something new. We're going to have a book club episode in about a month with Nikki Ehrlich. She's the author of The Measure. If you follow us on Instagram, I've talked about that in stories, how I wanted to try to do sort of a book club podcast. We'll start by discussing this book. It's not necessarily a new book, but I read it over the summer and I had a lot to say about it. Penn has not read it. You may not.
So we were talking about this. Is it good for us to have like one person who hasn't read it and one person who has? Like I would sort of be the fly on the wall and then occasionally ask stupid questions.
I think that's actually actually representative of a true book club because traditionally any book club, I'm such a rule follower. I would actually read the book, but most people
are there for the wine.
Right. So I think that's actually, you don't have to read it.
Not only that, maybe I'll get in character. Maybe I'll be like,
character.
Yeah, I'll be like, I'll drink a couple of glasses of wine and be in the background like, how's everybody doing?
Yeah. Is that what you think book clubs sound like?
I do. Well, I don't know. I just figured you guys all got in pillow fights. No, I'm joking. I do think that there are people who just want the friendship.
Social part.
Yeah. Yes. And so we want to invite you, even if you haven't read the book, to just hang out with me in the back and just see what happens.
See what happens.
Exactly.
Because I would love it if you have read the book or plan to read the book. The book is called The Measure by Nikki Ehrlich. We'll put a link to it in the show notes if you want to purchase it or check it out from the library. And if you have any questions for the author or discussion prompts for the book club episode, email them to podcast@theholdernessfamily.com. We'll link that also in the show notes and we'll announce the episode date soon, but you can get started. It's a real quick read. I read it in like a day and a half. So you can get your questions ready and for the next couple weeks. And we're honestly just being totally transparent. We're just going to see how this goes. I love to read and I love to have I love to talk about it with people afterwards. So if we feel, and like you're writing a new book, so maybe we can have you on the book club podcast.
I mean, thank you. It's just an honor to be invited to my own podcast.
Yeah, but I don't know. Maybe this works. Maybe I don't know. Or maybe it doesn't.
I will say that I had major mentionitis about this book while you were reading it. And that's a sign of a good book. Like you wanted to talk about it. You thought it was a really novel concept. No pun intended, or I guess pun intended. And so for those of you thinking about reading it, she really did kind of breeze through it. And anytime there's a book where you're kind of hanging out and the person says, you know what, I'm going to sneak out and just go read my book. That's a sign of like a sticky book. And I think this was a sticky book.
Okay. If you want to stay informed with all this latest announcements, sign up for our newsletter at theholdernessfamily.com/newsletter.
Okay. So let's talk about today. You know what? Today is dedicated to people who have dogs, and also to the dogs. If dogs, if you understand me, this show is for you because we are going to try to understand you better. Kim and I love dogs. You may know that we have a dog. Her name is Sunny. She happens to be the world's laziest dog, in our opinion, the world's most perfect dog. But also, we just kind of sit around and I'm always wondering, like, what are you thinking about? What are you dreaming about? Are you okay? Are you happy?
Are you depressed?
Are
you just tired?
Yeah.
We spend a lot of time thinking about the emotional well-being of our dog because, let's face it, there are times when dogs are just the best of us, right?
Yep. And anyway, so we're going on a journey here. We did, before this podcast started, we talked to like a dog expert, and she's also a bioethicist. Her name is Dr. Jessica Pierce. She focuses on human-animal relationships, and we asked her about this. She reminded us that one of the things that we need to do when analyzing all of this is just to let dogs be dogs.
Some people don't actually let their dog just be a dog. Mm. Like, dogs like to let the wind fly through their hair and stick their nose out the window, and they like to roll in gross stuff, and they like to forage on the sidewalk, and they like to sniff each other's butts, and all these things that as a pet parent you could get really upset about or feel uncomfortable about. And I think we just need to remember that they are dogs and have a set of dog specific needs that aren't necessarily met if we just treat them as children.
Sometimes I'm guilty of thinking that my dog is a human in a dog suit. I really feel like sometimes she'll just be sitting there. I'm like, oh, you're a person. Yep. I gave birth to you.
Occasionally I'll say, oh, Sunny, you've eaten a lot of food. You're like, the doctor has said that you've gotten a little chubby, and you will say,
don't fat shame her.
But
cover her ears. Cover her ears. Anyway, we wanted to talk more about what's going on inside a dog's head. So we invited Victoria Stillwell on this week's podcast. And I'm so excited.
Victoria Stillwell is a world-renowned dog trainer, best known as the star of the international hit TV series It's Me or the Dog. She also served as a judge for The Greatest American Dog on CBS. And as the resident dog behavior expert on The One Show on BBC One. Her show, Dogs with Extraordinary Jobs, currently airs worldwide, including Channel 5 in the UK and the Smithsonian Channel in the USA.
She's a passionate advocate for positive reinforcement and dog training methods. Stillwell is the author of 5 best-selling books, including It's Me or the Dog, How to Have the Perfect Pet, and The Secret Language of Dogs. Welcome to the show, Victoria Stillwell.
Thank you.
I think it's really important to know that you're pretty fancy, but we know you, like, from the way back times.
Way back.
Penn?
Yes, I came to your wedding.
I know.
So, Penn, do you want to reveal?
Yes. So first of all, I should call you Victoria, Mrs. Stillwell. I mean, we call you Vic off the. Okay, so I'm just gonna call you Vic anyway.
That's fine.
So yeah. Vic is married to my friend Van Zeiler, and he's a very old friend. And Van and I were in an a cappella group together, and then decided to join a band together in college. You may have heard us talk about my college band. We played a bunch of cover music and a few originals when we were in college, and we have kept in touch to the point that we've played some reunions. We most recently played a few weeks ago in Connecticut for our drummer's 50th birthday. And so we've gotten to the point where we're all now gray-haired, older, struggling to hit any of the notes that we hit before. But it's a unique band because we have three singers. So we have a lot of three-part harmony. And not everybody gets hoarse at the same time. Van somehow still sounds the same as he did in college. He had some stints in theater on or near Broadway. So he's like, I'm the least talented person in my band. And he married this fascinating woman, Victoria Stilwell, who is like an international icon when it comes to dog behavior. So this is such a perfect match. And I'm going to stop talking, but that's how we know Victoria.
Yeah. And, you know, I just want to say that obviously I was a dog trainer for a long time before I got my show. But it was at your wedding. I think it was the day before or the day after that I found out that It's Me or the Dog was a go.
Wow.
Really?
Yes.
I do have a memory of like there was some like excitement around. And I was like, wait, you have a like what? Tell me. Like, how did that all happen?
Okay, so I was an actor for a long time, and of course that's how I met Van, because we were cast in a musical in the West End in London, and he was cast out of New York to play Buddy Holly, and I was cast out of London to play Buddy's wife, Maria Elena. And so we met in London, and we did the show actually on tour first, and then we did a year in London, and then we did the American tour. But it was during that time, well, actually even before that, that I was working with dogs as well, because as an actor, you always have to have a second string to your bow. Right. And so really when we moved to Manhattan after that, I went into dog training full time. And then I was doing a lot of rescue work, and I was really annoyed at the waste of life that I was seeing in the shelters of Manhattan and the five boroughs. So I thought, how am I going to get this whole, you know, positive training, but also how am I going to get my message out that if there is an issue, you don't have to put your dog into a shelter, right? Yeah. There's something you can do about it. How am I going to get that out to a wider audience? And that's when I watched the first episode of The Super Nanny. You know, the Joe Fosse comes to, yeah. And that's when I went, oh my gosh, I do exactly the same with dogs. So I wrote to the producers and was like, I've got a great idea for a new show. Not children this time, but dogs. And the next day they called me. So 3 months later, we were filming the pilot in the UK. Yeah, it was insane.
Okay, this is all making sense now, because what I remember from my wedding was Van's got a cute wife who apparently is doing some sort of version of Super Nanny. I remember the word Super Nanny. Yeah. And so that's the way he pitched it. And I think he said Super Nanny for dogs. So now this is all coming back to me.
Congratulations on your success. And I can't imagine how many dogs through your work you've been able and families you've been able to help. So you must be, I don't know, that I'm very proud of you and all the work you've done.
Well, thank you. I could say the same for you. I mean, truly, you have just lit, you got us through COVID. You make us smile. And even if I didn't know you, you'd still make a smile. And that's what I think is rare in this day and age now, that you have created something that is so wonderful and just joyous and that we can relate to. I keep on watching your videos and I go, yes, yes, she knows how we feel. Being of a certain age.
We are definitely a certain age.
Well, thank you so many kind words for those kind words. We are obsessed with our dog. And as so many people are, and I think especially the world seems very heavy right now. And so I'm in my dog's face all the time because she brings me so much joy. Do you feel like sometimes I do the bad thing where I think that my dog is actually just a human in a dog suit and I talk to her? Do you feel like our dogs are trying to communicate with us? Like, and if so, how are they trying to do that?
All the time. And, you know, they are watching us, they're smelling us, and they see the world through smell a lot as well as through their sight. But they are trying to communicate with us, and they do that through body language. They have evolved over thousands of years to live with humans more successfully, but there's still a disconnect there, obviously, because they're still dogs. Mm-hmm. If you think about it, there's two predators living in the same house together, right? And when it goes wonderfully, it's wonderful. When things happen that maybe not so easy to deal with, then that's when people call me. But, you know, a lot of the work that I also do is preventative. So I really help people understand what their dogs are trying to say. So our dogs are communicating with us. But I have to say, with regards to, you know, you saying sometimes I treat my dog like a human. Well, actually, that's not wrong. And the reason why I say that is because behavioral and cognitive science, we are finding so much more about our dogs. And the studies that have been done shows that rat, dog, human brain are very, very similar. Mm. Of course, there are differences that make a dog a dog, make a rat, and make a human, but the similarities, especially with that ancient brain, the limbic system, spot on. And that's why so much research, unfortunately, is done on rats and mice when it comes to human health and development, psychological and physical as well as dogs. So a lot of the same medications that dogs take, humans take too.
If rats were cuter, would we do less testing on them?
I think so. Yeah. I think we would, but unfortunately they get the brunt of it.
I know, it sucks.
Yeah.
Hey, hang in there. We're going to be right back.
You should celebrate yourself every day, but some days you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Victoria, what is the most common misconception humans have when it comes to their dog and them trying to communicate? Like, what do we get wrong consistently?
Okay. I think there's been this myth going around for a long time. And the myth is that your dog is trying to, when it behaves badly, and I use that sort of word with, you know, when it misbehaves in the human eyes, that it's trying to take over, be dominant the household, trying to become pack leader and top dog and run your household and all that kind of stuff. Well, that's a myth. I mean, you know, dogs are smart, but they are not as smart as that to strategize a human coup. Right. They don't want to achieve a home or world domination. The fact that they maybe misbehave in our human world is because they don't know what to do, and they're dogs. And so it's up to us to give them the skills to teach them what to do. So I think that's the biggest myth when people say, oh, my dog is aggressing because it's trying to be dominant, and then you have to like make it submissive towards you. And that's really damaged trust between human and dog. And it's really caused, you know, people to have difficult relationships with their animals. And it's also, you know, caused quite a lot of aggressive behavior, or at least exacerbated aggressive behavior. So what we're now, and we're supported by science, sort of, I would say the positive community, we're supported by now decades of science, which is fantastic. And I'm not talking about the bad science, I'm talking about good science, right? Of, you know, wonderful studies that have been done in Hungary, in Budapest in Hungary, by Adam McClosey and his team. And, you know, they just bring in family dogs and you go in with your dog and you do all of these kind of cognitive, wonderful games and things. So they can really find out how dogs think, feel and learn. I think that has just sort of exploded our understanding. And now we see that whole like dominance thing is just, it's sort of, it needs to stay in the trash where it really belongs.
Do you feel as if our dog's behavior comes from just the general breed, or is it nature versus nurture? What do you think?
Yeah, I love that. So we call it genetics, we call it epigenetics, right? So genetics are
what the dog is born with. And so, yes, a lot of dog behavior is down to genetics, right? Mm-hmm. So sometimes you might have a dog that is genetically predisposed to do certain things. Now, there are genetic traits. So, for example, if you've got a border collie, that border collie is likely to be highly sound sensitive, quite nervy at times, and maybe might herd your children, mm-hmm. right? But then there are also genetics where they have predisposition to maybe to be relatively anxious. That's because mom and dad was anxious, grandparents were anxious, or there might be some aggressive display, resource guarding, and you might see that that actually dog comes from a family of resource guarders. So then there's the epigenetics. So, and the epigenetics means that, like, how is the dog influenced by the nature of, like, how it lives and how it's raised. And so that can be a problem. If a dog is not raised from a very early age in a loving environment, a supportive environment where they're exposed to a whole load of things in a very positive way, then you can have issues and problems. It's exactly like, you know, with kids. And so, you know, nurture really does play a big part. But if you've got a dog that is a little compromised anyway, it can make things a lot harder.
I don't know. I feel like we reached out to you during this time, but we had a situation. We adopted a dog from a rescue, and I'm totally going to try not to cry. But this was years ago. And within about a week, she started biting people in her house.
It was a little more than a week, but yeah, it was pretty quick.
She was, I think, 3 months old when we adopted her. And we were like, oh, she's a puppy. And it was kind of like puppy.
She's learning with her mouth.
She's learning with her mouth. But it was in hindsight, she was breaking the skin. And I felt very safe around her. But she built a bit of producer who walked in her house. She built Penn's dad. And then the final straw. So she bit a babysitter. And then she bit my niece. And like bad. And at that point, we have like a dog behaviorist. We did all the blood work. We had dog trainers. We did like five different things.
We tried everything.
Yeah. We sent her away for training. We brought her in for training. And I would say universally, everybody came back with, this is like not safe anymore. Like this, you have kids in your house. This isn't safe.
That's what they ended with. But what they started with was.
They blamed me because I'm anxious. They're like, you have anxiety and your dog is picking up on this anxiety. And so a lot, not them all. Like our vet was like, this is unsafe. But like a lot of the dog trainers are like, well, if you have a lot of people in your house and you're anxious, this is how your dog's going to react. And I felt such shame that it was my fault that my dog was reacting this way. And then my vet was the one who had to shake me by the shoulders and was like, this is unsafe and it's not your fault. Some dogs are just built like this, but I still carry that shame of like, I couldn't make, I'm very competitive. And I'm like, I could not make it work, but she was hurting people. So I always ask that question. And it sounds like what you were saying is it's kind of a soup of everything that, yes, the way she came to us was very damaged, but it probably didn't help that we live in a house where people are in and out all the time and that I suffer some anxiety. So it's, I don't know. There was no question there. I just wanted to, if anybody else is listening and has gone through that, like sometimes the dogs come to you and they're just kind of cooked that way. Then
Can I just support you? Can I just support the fact that I think a lot of people do feel shame when their dogs are with that kind of behavior to the extent, and they're trying, but nothing seems to work. And so I think it's, of course, what we do with our dogs definitely can impact them, but maybe that dog would have been much better to be in a house on a farm far away where nobody visited. And, you know, unfortunately, the dog was at your house. And I have to say, showing that behavior within a week of being there, that's not your fault. That behavior was like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we're really talking about dogs here, and I think sometimes we have to like just get down to basics and talk about this animal that came into your house was not able to cope with a lot of different human interaction. It couldn't cope. That was what its makeup was. And so you, with the best of intentions, did what you could to try and make it work. And the dog couldn't cope. You could have done everything and the dog still can't cope, because the dog is not made to live in your home, mm-hmm. to live in most homes. Mm-hmm. And so we always say in rescue as well, of like, we want to find that person that lives on a farm that has nobody to come visit them ever.
Yeah.
And then that dog might be okay. But that's not the real world.
Okay. So I want to go back to what you said about preventative work. And I actually spoke to Van about this when I saw him a couple of weeks ago. And I think that this is all very interesting. When we first met Ruby, she was coming from a kill shelter in Louisiana. She came out of this, you know, big 18-wheeler and had found freedom. And we were just helping process these dogs and get them to their next spot. We were volunteering. And Ruby just started, like, we kind of sunk into Kim's arms and started licking her face. And there was instant love. There was instant, like, emotions that we've never had before. And from that moment on, like, we're taking the dog. Like, we had all kinds of other, I had some questions. I think there's a video of this on YouTube. And none of the questions mattered because they were really about, like, do we have a crate? Like, do we have food? Like, well, that's all going to be handled. What matters is that this dog loves me, I love it, and it's coming home with us. That is a common thing that happens when you find a dog. It's my understanding that you do have, in part of, like, what you do, you have, like, personality matches that you can do very early on with a dog. I don't know if you can do it with a 12-week-old dog, which is how old Ruby is, but can you talk a little bit about some of those matching exercises that you can do that maybe could go along with that outpouring emotional feeling to maybe help find the right kind of dog?
Yeah. So, well, I want to say that the love that you felt for that, for Ruby is, that's oxytocin, really. And that's your bonding hormone. That's exactly what happens, you know, when a mom holds the baby for the first time and the dad holds the baby for the first time, yeah. right? You get the surge of oxytocin. So that is helping you bond. And also, FYI, dogs get surges of oxytocin too. That's why we bond. Mm-hmm. And so the licking can be, we see licking a lot as, oh, this is a dog making connection and love. And in fact, it can be. But also it can be appeasement gestures as well. So the dog is licking you, either because you taste salty or because it is an appeasement gesture, or truly the dog is trying to get some kind of connection with you. Can be quite a submissive behavior. So fast forward to, like, okay, how do you, like, how do you choose that dog? How do you know that that's the dog? Put that sort of emotional, overwhelming oxytocin surge aside. I always caution people to, if there's a whole load of puppies, for example, or even adult dogs, I caution people, don't lose your heart to the one that's cowering in the corner. Have the one, I'm looking for a dog that wants to have social interaction and is excited about social interaction and has fluid body language and a kind of helicopter tail. And even in a moment of stress, being in a shelter, having just been transported, that transition where they don't know what's happening to them, is resilient and can bounce back really fast. So, for example, we might do, and again, it's I call it a snapshot in time. So you have to give dogs time to come into your home and relax before you really see true behavior. But there are things that you can do, you know, how do they respond to a noise? How do they bounce back? So what is their resilience? Do they accept a lot of people coming up and touching them? And even though we really don't want to be going up and touching dogs a lot, mm-hmm. we also have to make sure that if we have children in the home, that dogs are okay with that. So it's, how are they handled? Is a lot of aggressive behavior and a lot of anxious behavior is because of pain. And a lot of noise phobia is because of pain, and pain goes so undiagnosed. So I'll do a lot of handling. I'll handle the dog's body from the head to the tip of the tail, to the paws. What are they like when I handle them? And I do it when a dog's full of adrenaline, they're not going to feel so much pain. So I take the dog to a place where we can calm down a little bit. So that adrenaline starts to, like, fade down, the dog can calm. And then I start to touch a little bit just to make sure, is there any pain in this body? So I'm looking for how resilient the dog is, how it connects with you, and then how is there any pain anywhere that could influence the dog's behavior? So that's sort of what I do. And in initial contact, because, you know, thank you, A, for volunteering mm-hmm. and for helping these dogs. But when they've been transported from the south, I live in the south, so a lot of transports go up to the north mm-hmm. because we've got such a bad pet overpopulation problem down here. Less so now, I have to say, that less animals are being transported. But, you know, they are under a lot of stress. Mm-hmm. So if you have a dog that can cope with that, wow, then they're pretty resilient.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the kind of helicopter tail wag. What do the different tail wags mean?
Yeah. So again, I think this is also a myth that if a dog is wagging its tail, it's happy. It's really not. The tail is that beacon. It tells you how the dog is.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Feeling. Mm-hmm. So I look, you know, when we teach our students, right, because I have an academy where we teach people to be trainers, and we teach them, you've got to be an ethologist, right? You look at behavior without emotion. Just look at behavior, what the dog is actually doing. Look at the head, the body, and the tail. And then look at the context, which means the environment of what the, you know, where is the dog? So, and when you just look at it dispassionately, like an ethologist, that goes, I want to find out what that dog is really thinking and feeling without putting a label on it really quickly. Then I look at dog behavior. And so if I have a tail that's like going back really back and forth really, really fast, I'm going to look and go, is that dog, you know, excited, or is that dog aroused? And by aroused, I mean there's a lot of adrenaline going through its body. It's fearful, it's nervous, it's excited. And then I got to look at what the body's doing. So if that tail's going really fast, what's the body doing? Is it fluid or stiff? Is the dog cowering, or is the dog lengthening throughout its body? And then the head, what's the head doing? Is the mouth open and relaxed, or is it closed? Are the eyes tense? Are the brows furrowed? Are the ears back, or are the ears forward? So the tail wagging, now I get a better picture. If the tail wagging is really, really flicking back and forth, and the body's tense and the mouth is tense, I go, this dog is not feeling great. Mm-hmm. But if the tail is going back and forth and the body's fluid, and then the dog is that lovely shining eyes, and then I know that the dog is feeling okay. So that's why I'll look at behavior first. Literally look at behavior first. And I teach all my clients to do this. Observe your dog, observe your dog, observe your dog. Just sit there, get a cup of coffee and just watch what your dog does. Then you can get an idea of how your dog is feeling. We always teach people, do not label your dog. Oh, my dog is happy, or my dog is sad. My dog is excited, or my dog is aggressive. We don't use that. So it's a real art to kind of finding how your dog feels by just looking at that body language.
I want to ask you about something that I've been told that by a couple of people that kind of bums me out, because I don't know. So I've heard that a dog, when it comes up to you and like asks to be pet, that someone told me that that's only because it's trying to appease me, not because it wants to hang out with me. And like my ego is like, no, I want my dog to like me and want me to pet him. And I mean, Sunny seems to like that. Have you heard this theory before? And is it true? And if so, what are we going to do with my ego?
Yeah.
It's all about ego here. Yeah.
All right. So do dogs love us? I think we need to go back to that.
Okay, let's
do
that.
How do we know, mm-hmm. right? How do we know that dogs love us? Well, again, is the dog that comes up to you and licks you saying, oh, I love you, or is it appeasing you? Is it licking your face and being submissive towards you because it fears what's going to happen to it, right? Let's say it's a new dog and, you know, it doesn't really know you very well. Well, here's the way you tell. And it's exactly the same with humans. It's that oxytocin surge, right? Which is the number one thing. But what does that body language do? Now, I do the 3-second rule, right? If my dog comes up to me, or if a dog comes up to me, not my dogs, because they know me very well, and I really do think they love me, but if I stroke them, if they come up to me and they're, you know, doing all that, and I stroke them, I do it for 3 strokes and then I stop. And if they kind of like lean into me, they're saying, can you touch me more? I want more of this.
Okay.
I think we're good.
If they walk away, okay. You just wanted just to hang out, maybe get some like, but most of the time, if the dog knows you and it's choosing to come up to you and be close to you, I think that's more expression of love rather than, hey, you feed me. If I do this, you're going to feed me.
Well,
or I'm appeasing you. No.
Our dog, well, because Sunny, she's just the laziest, most wonderful dog. But she'll, like, if you stop petting her, she, like, puts a paw on you. As it'd be like, I'd like some more now. No, I think she has a crush on you. She loves you.
Okay.
My dog, Sunny, so wonderful. And I think has everything to do with her breed. And she came to fully cooked and just perfect. And to the point where like we have people in and out of our house all the day. We're shooting here. We're putting lights over her because she won't even move. I mean, she's the perfect production
dog.
She's a good production dog. She, to me, because she loves other dogs. She loves people, but she just is sort of, I don't want to shame her, but she's a little lazy. And anytime another dog comes over for a doggy play date, she lights up and she's like springing around and running around. Our children think she's depressed and that we need another dog. Do dogs need other dogs? Because right now, I don't know if I can handle 2 vet bills and and the energy around having another dog.
Okay.
This is not a marriage counseling thing. We will support whatever decision you have. You're not picking sides here. I want to make sure this is clear.
Okay.
Because that's what that okay sounded like.
Yes. If your dog has a playmate, come around and play, and it lights up, has a great time, that doesn't necessarily mean that that dog wants that playmate there all the time. And as long as you're giving your dog those opportunities to meet other dogs, especially if it's social and play, then that's fine. And as long as you're enriching your dog in other ways, people coming into your house, it sounds like she's very human social, so that she's getting enriched by that. And walks, she's getting enriched by that. And your communication with her, that's enriching. And then the odd play date, that's enriching. And so I have 2 dogs and I do think that there is some comfort in it, but some dogs are, I mean, most dogs especially when they're raised. They are human social and they get their enrichment from being with humans.
Okay.
And so it doesn't necessarily mean you have to have another dog in your house, as long as she has the opportunities to hang out and play. And yeah. And the problem with having two dogs, I'm not saying it's a bad problem. I'm just saying it is double the work, double the vet bills, double everything. But also you have to be very aware that, like siblings, they also need space from each other. So now you're dealing with two dogs and their different needs for space, for time, and it's just a lot. And I think with your busy lifestyle, I think maybe one dog right now is the thing because it's working. Why would you bring another dog into the house?
Yeah. Here's why.
I'm going to play that clip for my kids, by the way.
I'm going to tell you the only reason why I think it would be great to have another dog. You mentioned walking. our dog is a cat. Right? Like
our
dog is a cat. She's adorable. She's a perfect cat. But like she does not like being on a leash and being like, we'll walk and she'll just prance along with us for about
50 yards,
75 yards, and then just stops in the middle of the street. And I'm like, Sonny, we have to carry her back. Come on.
And she'll lay down in the street. A car will come.
She's like that. Okay.
She's like, I'm done. And so we try to.
We bring treats along. We do the whole thing. We try to. If she's not on a leash, she'll walk for miles. Like if we go to the beach and we take the leash off, she's fine. But on a leash, she's like.
We try to get her.
I'd rather not.
Yeah. We try to get her exercise in other ways. Like we've got a big, decent sized backyard where she can run around.
But she doesn't.
No, not really. The main exercise she gets is when another dog comes to visit.
Okay, so let's let Victoria talk.
Yeah. Okay. There's a lot of dogs that don't like walking on the lead. All right. So you need to have a leash, obviously, for safety.
Right.
But I think if a dog could like just speak your language for 10 minutes, it would tell you a whole load of things that it didn't like. And one of the things it would tell you is that I do not like being walked on a lead. And why is that? Well, we need it. It's our canine life preserver. So we need it. And obviously we have to follow leash laws. But from the dog's point of view, this annoying piece of rope is stopping their ability from acting naturally. Mm-hmm. And it also can make some dogs feel very uncomfortable. And that's why you see a lot of reactivity at the end of the leash. Mm-hmm. Because the dog cannot think for itself, cannot make its own choices, cannot put distance between itself and a threat as much as it might want to do, and has to walk at your pace, and has to walk most of the time in a straight line. Dogs don't walk in straight lines. Mm-hmm. They walk side to side and they like to sniff this smell and then sniff this other smell. But on a lead, basically when we're going for a walk, people like to walk in straight lines. Mm-hmm. So actually teaching your dog that skill of leash walking, that is a skill. Yeah. It is difficult for dogs to learn to do it. And some dogs just don't like doing it. Now, there's this whole, of course, take your dog for a walk. But you also don't have to, as long as you're enriching your dog in other ways. Now, in the back garden, if you're playing games and then you have play dates around, or she can hang out with you in the front yard and go for a little poodle around your neighborhood, that's fine. If it's 50 yards or whatever, it doesn't matter. That's fine.
Okay.
So there are a lot of dogs that actually do not thrive from being walked.
Okay, this has made me feel better because this is like one of my, another thing I felt a little shame about, because unless we are at the beach where, and honestly, there's only leash laws during the summer, so it'd be like a fall trip to the beach, she'll go for miles because honestly, she just wants to be next to me and she'll stay, even if there's another dog or another person, she'll stay next to me, but she just hates the leash. What does being right pawed say about a dog's personality?
Yeah. Okay. Really? So like people, dogs can be, right pawed, right handed or left pawed, left handed, or they can be ambidextrous. So, and if you want to find out, is your dog right pawed or left pawed, then just give them a toy and see how they manipulate that toy mm-hmm. with their feet. And are they using their right paw a little bit more or the left paw? And it's when people say that my dog is right pawed, well, it's sort of the poor brain and enjoys this relationship of like the right hand side of this body is also controlled by the left hemisphere and vice versa. So it actually, if your dog is right pawed, then that right paw left hemisphere relationship indicates more calm, more ability to be a bit more resilient.
Interesting.
To be a bit less anxious. Yeah.
And so left paw, what does that mean?
Well, again, the right brain sort of is that right hemisphere sort of deals with more, and I'm really simplifying this here, but more sort of fear, caution approach behaviors. So if, and I want to talk to you about how dogs smell things because this is relevant. So again, left paw could indicate a dog that's a little bit more cautious. But so if you think about it, right hemisphere is more of that sort of, so right paw left hemisphere is that kind of like,
yeah,
that kind of good, excitable, everything's fine. And this right, left paw, right hemisphere is more caution, is more to do with caution approach behaviors. So interestingly enough, when dogs go smell something for the first time, they smell through their right nostril only, because that right nostril goes not to the left hemisphere, to the right hemisphere of the brain. So it's always cautious, always like when I'm approaching that smell, I'm going to smell with my right. Now, if it's a smell that I like, now I'm going to smell with my left. My left is going to join. If it's a smell that I don't like, let's say a vet's come, they've done lots of studies about this in Italy as well. They've done lots of fascinating studies about how dogs smell things. Then if it's a smell that I don't like, I'm not going to use my left nostril. I'm going to continue with my right nostril and probably back away. So whilst paws enjoy this sort of this opposite relationship, the nose is directed, the right is directed to the right. Am I making sense?
Yeah.
I know it's really complicated.
No, you're making sense, but it's also crazy that I've never heard this before. And I've certainly not thought about whether my dog is right pawed or left pawed.
No, she kind of like pats you with her right paw.
I think she's she's an ambipatter, isn't she? You think she just uses her...
whatever paw's there?
Yeah. Whatever. Well, yeah. I don't know now. I got to figure it out. And then just the snorting out of two different noses. And I guess my follow-up is, you said that dogs, rats, and humans have the same brain. Is that, if I'm left-handed, does that mean I'm more anxious as a human?
Potentially.
Oh, crap.
Potentially. But again, you know, I'm not a scientist. I read and take what the scientists tell me so I can use it with dogs. So, for example, if you really want to find out your dog, get a puzzle toy and then you'll see how your dog manipulates the puzzle toy or with the right paw or the left paw. Yes, the similar thing is the same with humans. And why is this? Because when we're talking about that ancient mammalian brain that all mammals have, that we call it the amygdala, the limbic brain. That's where we have all our emotions. That's what causes flight or fight, freeze or fidget. That is similar. Now, when we're talking about the thinking part of the brain, which we call the cerebral cortex, that is a lot more advanced in humans in a certain way, advanced in rats in a different way, and advanced in dogs in a different way. So, but that limbic part of the brain that is our response, because emotions are biological responses to the environment, right? We know that dogs have emotions the evidence is out there. But we just don't know exactly how they feel, because feelings are human interpretations of emotions. However, dogs express their emotions very similar to people. So, for example, if you're watching a football game, and your team scores, you might jump up and make a lot of noise. Well, what do dogs do when you come home from work at the end of the day? They're going to jump up and bark and get very excited. So we see the same sort of expressions. So we can see it in real time about how our dogs feel. And then, of course, all the scientific studies as well of like the hormone concentration in the blood and the neurotransmitters and all of that. It's the same.
As we wrap up here, what do you think our dogs want us to do? Know? No, what That's do they an... think they want us to know about them?
I think they would like us to know that they are not trying to misbehave, that they have to be taught skills in order to cope. And I don't call it commands. I call teaching a dog to wait and turn around quickly if needed and settle down. And I don't really teach dogs to sit and lie down and give paw and all that. I don't. I teach them life skills, how to practice avoidance if needed, how to walk well on a lead, how to wait for some food or wait by the door, how to just stay quiet, how to amp up and then settle down, things like that. I think that's what they'd say is, can you treat, please, because your human world is very confusing. So first of all, could you please be consistent?
Yeah.
And can you give me lots of love and as much food as I want? And, you know, but most importantly, they would say, please keep me safe.
I think that's all
end
we
end of the day.
Yeah,
that's all, what we want.
That's all any of us want.
Yeah.
Do we need to wrap up with me grabbing Sunny and having her say hello?
Do you want to introduce Sunny?
Yeah. Let's just maybe we'll get some more intel on. I'm just going to show Sunny, and okay. She's going to be like, "Oh, yeah." Well, Sunny
so give us one minute. Yeah, he has to go downstairs, and we'll just talk about. Our dog identifies as a cat, but you've made me feel a lot better about her not going on these like 5 mile long walks. Yeah. But
you don't have to. You really don't have to. And I mean, I if your dog loves walking, great. And don't just sort of shove them in the back garden and hope that they're going to enrich themselves. You do have to have some interaction, obviously. But dogs can live very happy lives without
going
for a walk.
I'm getting the hard sell from the three other people who live in this house about getting another dog. But I, as you know, I'm the one who picks up the poop, and I'm the one who does all the food, and I'm the one who does all the appointments. Like, I don't want to do. Yeah. Okay, here comes Sunny. Okay, the star of the show. She's a cat. Oh, she doesn't even jump up onto the cat. Okay.
So beautiful. Look at her. Oh my gosh, she's just.
Yeah, okay, hold on. Sunny.
Bye.
Okay, so also
bye,
when.
Sunny.
Hey, this is Sunny. When dogs like smile, are they smile? So somebody told me that dogs actually aren't. When it looks like they're smiling, they're actually stressed. Is that true? Or is that another tail wag thing?
No, I mean, it can't look smiling. It is, you know, when they have that, like they show their teeth. I truly think that that's a smile.
Okay,
I mean,
good.
People say it could be an appeasement gesture, but no, because it happens when they're feeling great and you're coming towards them and they love you. And
okay. So somebody told me that it was like when your dog is stressed. I was like, oh no, don't tell me that. Okay. No, well, no.
Again, look at what the rest of the body is doing. That is going to tell you exactly how your dog is feeling.
Okay. As you see, our dog is a cat.
Yes. Yeah. Well, look, golden retrievers. I mean, she is just divine.
Yes, and she is.
They
She's
are,
perfect.
They are a, some of them, I mean, some of them can be like full on, and others truly can be more couch potatoes. Now, they do have, you have to be careful, obviously, because they can put on weight easy.
Yes.
And we had a lab, and, you know, she came to us at 5 years old, and she was so overweight. Mm. So we spent our lives trying to get that weight off, which we eventually did, but it took a long time. So they really do. Labs, golden retrievers, it can be hard. So as long as she's getting that exercise that she needs to keep trim, but she's fine. She looks very content.
This is going to look a little crazy, but you can do anything with her. Like you can turn her, like you
so
can hold her.
Stress her out.
Like you can do this. You can do this. She just doesn't. She doesn't care. You can like I've never seen a dog that you can hold like a cradle on her back and doesn't mind.
Yeah.
Like that's dogs hate that, right? Like that's not a comfortable spot for her when she's
for
comfortable.
For most dogs, they don't like it. But then there's others that are just, you know, they're comfortable. And again, I just think she feels safe. She feels like these are my people. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And so why, you know, just do. And because she's a dog that likes to say, oh, no, keep touching, keep touching, then that's what she likes.
Okay.
You're lucky. I mean, you know, from what you did have, and I'm really sorry that you went through that experience, but no shame to now the dog that you do have. This is the dog for your family.
100%. This is the dog for our family. Right, Sunny Bunny? Well, thank you so much for your time. So where can people find... Sunny, you want to say something, Sunny?
Hi, Sunny. What, are you smelling that with your right nostril or your...
Left.
She's smelling the microphone.
Put it on her left nostril. But where can people find you and follow you and get more information about what you do?
Okay. Well, the obvious social media stuff. If you want to see my, well, first of all, follow me at Victoria Stillwell. Mm-hmm. One L in the middle of Stillwell, and at Victoria S on, gosh, there's so many social media platforms. I don't know. But if you want to
we'll
see
put
the
it
show,
in show, we'll put in the, we'll find them all and put them in your show, the show notes. Okay.
If you want to see the show, you go onto the It's Me or the Dog Facebook, YouTube, or TikTok pages, and you can see a lot of excerpts from the show and some, you know, full show. And there's 150 episodes. There's a lot.
Wow.
And then, but if you are interested in becoming a trainer, then I have an academy, and it's the Victoria Stillwell Academy, VSA. And it is the, well, we think it's the number one training school out there. And it is online, and you can, there's an in-person option as well. So if you're interested in becoming a trainer, it's VSA. So vsdogtrainingacademy.com. And then if you just want information and courses, you go to positively.com. There's loads of information about dog behavior. And we are very, very shortly going to be having a whole like 26 new courses for dog lovers.
Oh my gosh.
Like just 30 minute courses where if, oh my gosh, my dog is doing this, like how do I deal with it? Well, you just take a course. Oh. And some of them are free. The others just really, really good value. Yeah. So positively.com.
You are so busy. And let me just say also the fact that just we've been, nobody will ever see it because it'll never happen, but we've been, there's a show concept, a game show concept we've been pitching. We've been partnered with a production company that we've been pitching to networks, and it'll never happen. But it's been like 2 years, like we've been working on this. And the fact that you wrote to a network, you're like, I want to do this. And then 3 months later you were shooting. That's just the evidence of what a good concept and idea it is.
Yeah. Or what a bad concept ours
we
is.
We have.
Entirely, both are possible.
Both are true.
But you never know in Hollywood because they're always, I love Hollywood. They're always lying to you.
It's really tough because I just want also that I feel your pain. We've pitched like 20 different shows. Okay. Now, there have been other shows that I've filmed and Dogs with Extraordinary Jobs as well. Please check that out. That's dogs doing incredible things around the world. That was a show that I did pitch and that we did end up making. But it's so hard. But there is a show also that is just beautiful. And PBS picked it up, but we just couldn't get the funding because we just didn't have time to do it. Mm-hmm. But it's a show that I really want to do. And can we get it? It is so hard.
Yeah.
Now to get anything up there.
It is so. And then you see some, like your shows are great. And like, even just the title of your shows, like if I'm sitting in a boardroom, I'm like, yes, we need that show. I understand why our show doesn't really make a lot of sense because it was like a lot. It's a big like studio set. I think it'd be fun, but it's like a lot. It's like way too much money and a network doesn't want to spend that. But then you see some crap on TV. You're like, how did that get on TV?
Yep.
And they're not green lighting our thing.
You should be an executive, honey.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, anything Victoria pitches, yes.
Green light.
Yeah.
Green light.
Yeah, well, hopefully, but we'll see.
Sunny found a good spot.
I've got one more show in me, I think. And
this
then
is
that's
Sunny's
it.
Favorite
oh,
spot.
Look at that.
Oh, my. So you think you have one more show in you, and then it's so much work.
Yeah, there's a show that I really want to do, and it's as I said, it's a great one. It's a great one.
Are you allowed to tell us about it?
Not really.
It doesn't sound like it, honey.
One.
She's being.
No, I'm filming a new show in the UK right now called The Dog Academy, and it is. Fantastic. We had our first series, which aired in the UK, and now the second, we just finished filming the second series, which is great. And it's four of us trainers, not just me, thank goodness. But it's in this beautiful, stately home, this gorgeous mansion in the middle of the UK, and where people bring their dogs and their problems to us. So really wonderful. But yeah.
Yeah.
If there's four, does that mean, is it like Survivor? Do you like vote each other off the mansion or are you guys working together?
I did a show like that for CBS about 10 years ago. Yeah, which was insane.
Oh my
and
gosh.
I mean, it was a great show. I think it was a great show, but yeah. No, this is different. This is more, this is really emotional. It's really emotional, really funny as well, the whole thing. So, I hope Americans get to see it sometime.
Yeah, I know. I would love to be able to have access to these. I mean, I will say because we are all so obsessed with learning more about our dogs, and we are obsessed with our dogs. So thank you for all you do. And there, I think what I heard from this is that there needs to be Survivor for dogs.
Yeah.
Sunny would be voted out first because she's not going to contribute to making the shelter. She's going
to just be the poster child because she just looks gorgeous.
Yeah, I know. She's just going to, yeah. And but this, and we did do drug, we did do training. We did all of the, like, you know.
But it was chill, positive reinforcement.
But it worked. And that's why I'm like, okay, I know that she just came this way. It's not because we're good people. Anyway, thank you, Victoria, so much. It was so good to see you. And we'll talk to
you. Bye. You're welcome.